get ready to jump the boards and go behind the bench with the Anaheim Ducks coaching staff. From untold stories to the X's and the O's, we'll explore it all right here on Behind the Bench.
We're back in the Paul Kariya studio today for another episode of Behind the Bench. And I am joined now by head coach Greg Cronin. Crow, it's good to see you again. How are you doing?
I'm good, Alexis. I had the summer was quick, but I'm very excited to be back.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, you know, finishing up your first season as the head coach in the NHL last year, did you take some time to reflect back on it and think about everything that you learned?
Yeah, honestly, I had a lot of confidence going in. I've coached a long time, been involved in a lot of rebuilds from college to U.S. national teams to NHL rebuilds as an assistant coach. It's kind of been in my wheelhouse throughout my career, but never in the NHL as a head coach. And to be honest with you, the first thing that I got kind of surprised by was the amount of non-hockey related work there was. And, you know, compared to Toronto, where the media is a massive responsibility, we're fortunately here not as massive. Mm-hmm. And, but there are other things that go along with it that I was unprepared for it. Like there's an analytics staff, there's a catapult staff, there's a media session, management's involved. I mean, it's funny, I said to the staff last year, I was in the American League for 5 years, and then I was with the Islanders before that. And the Islanders have always had the perception, I don't know what it's like now with Lou Lamoriello there, but kind of a small organization in the outskirts of a big city like New York. But it's very similar to what I went through in the American League. You know, you have five or six of the same people every day. So the messaging is very, very direct. It's very consistent. A lot of transparency just in small groups like that. And that translates into very easy time management skills. And then, you know, last year it was learning everybody's name. Mm-hmm. It was learning how people are going to respond and react to communication, to direction. And that's just the staff. I didn't know any of the staff, so I didn't ever work with anybody. I worked with Brent Thompson for a little bit through training camps in New York. So, you know, he could understand these little nuances that coaches have, whether it's the language they use to communicate drills or systems. And so that process was challenging. I'm kind of a nose first, headstrong person, so I kind of plowed through it and and try to relate and communicate the messaging to the players, what the expectation was, what the standards were. And I thought they started out, you know, I think they tried all year. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of were the talk of the league the first 15 to 20 games. And then, you know, we went into that 8-game losing streak, and these challenges that I kind of bulldogged through became problematic. And I reflected quite a bit about that and how to manage that better.
Is that something that, you know, you're going to be taking into year two in the sense of just changing some of the things maybe that you were able to reflect on?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is, and you know, Pat's a great, great manager. Like he observed it. He's got a longer view of what's going on here. As a coach, your lifeline's not that long, right? So you're looking at results and you want to win now. I love living here. I love my job. I want to keep my job. Sometimes coaching decisions are now decisions where management decisions are long-term decisions. So Pat was able to look back at it and have a sense of perspective on where the organization's going, what the runway looks like for a 19 and 20-year-old kid through the eyes of management, not through a coach. And so we had good discussions throughout the year, and then we kind of cataloged them. And then at the end of the year, we had a really, I think, intense, collaborative meeting with management and analytics, strength coaches, assistant management, and we really had like a roundtable discussion about what I learned and how we operated as a staff and how we could have done a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had the discussion, we were able to, the one thing I'm proud of, like I'm embarrassed by the record. Okay. Like it was probably the second most difficult year for me in my 33 plus years coaching.
Mm-hmm.
The first was Northeastern when we had 3 wins my first year in 34 games. That's a brutal psychological journey. And then last year wasn't as bad, but it was the second worst. Like I really don't like losing.
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me. I don't sleep well. And then you talk about reflecting on the season. Then you have, I think people know this in these competitive industries where your mind's constantly in a defensive mode. You know, you're trying to defend and I'm not saying score wise. I'm saying like literally like what's the best way to manage this battle from a losing position. It's totally different than when you're winning battles. It's a different strategy. You play on your toes, you think on your toes, you have confidence. While you're trying to manage a younger group of players.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do think that we did as a staff create transparency. And like any relationship, you have to have a foundation of honesty and transparency. And honestly, Alexis, what happened to me was, you know, the messaging that I would give to players in the American League and even in New York, I mean, different people, but was very direct, very similar, but the response wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're losing and you're not getting the response that you expect, then emotions get involved. And then I could get maybe way too vocal than I should have been. And Pat was good. He'd come in and say, hey, listen, you got to step back. Like, you know, we're not good enough right now. Mm-hmm. To hit the expectations that you're demanding. I don't want you to change the expectation, but now you've got to change your approach on how you're going to get it the most out of these players.
One of the unique parts now about the team is that there is a captain and there is someone to step in and to talk to the group in a different sense from the player level. Radko Gudas now at the helm of that. And he's someone that when we just talked with Pat, he's an emotional guy. He brings emotion to the game and he wants to see this team playing with emotion and that have that competitive spirit. How do you think he is going to influence the locker room now?
Well, I think he's a do guy, right? So he has the ability to demonstrate behavior that I think you want young kids to mirror. He's not a vocal guy. You know, people always, they hear this like, you know, captains and, you know, I'm not going to throw names out there, but you automatically think it's a vocal guy, mm-hmm. inspiring guy that's gets in front of the group and is just really soul motivating person, right? Radko is not like that by nature. He galvanizes a group by the way he plays, by the way he finishes checks, he blocks shots, he plays for his team, mm-hmm. like, and it's on stage every time he plays in a game. He doesn't change. He doesn't care if it's 5-1 for us or 5-1 to them. So that behavior on the ice, which is visible to everybody, is more powerful than a rah-rah guy. So to add more substance to that by giving him a C will empower him to communicate more, even though he's not a rah-rah guy. I think it'll make him more comfortable in that role. And then it's a good segue because when I pull back now, because we've laid the foundation here,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact the record, I mean, I think we could have had 35 wins, but we didn't, okay?
Yeah.
But, and there's analytical data that shows a lot of good things that happened that didn't translate into wins. But now that they know that, then it's Radko and other leaders who, whether they're wearing any or not, they have to step in that, into that space where I was bulldogging and bullying my way through it, right? And they're the ones, and I think it becomes much more influential when your teammates are holding you to the standard that the coaches had created, you know, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's going to be a leadership by committee. I also think, and I've used this in the past, like it takes a village to raise a child. And we've got, I mean, in terms of like good NHL teams that are Stanley Cup playoff teams, we got 9 children.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. You got 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids littered across this roster. So it's going to take a village, you know, to raise these kids. And that village is going to be led by Ratko and his assistants.
For you now, you have some new faces on the coaching staff, some changes there in this offseason, bringing in Richard Klune, Tim Army as well. What does that mean for the outlook for you as a coach, having your staff, you know, some of the guys that you picked with you for the year?
Yeah. So first of all, I really enjoyed Newell Brown. He's been around a long time. He never has a bad day. He knows hockey. He's a good tactician. He's a good people person. And he's going to do well in Los Angeles. Craig Johnson's another guy. He's a great guy, really solid person, knows skill development. I was fully invested in what we were trying to do here as a staff. Brett Ferguson, you know, he'd been here for a long time. He did the video. I think he and Austin were a good team. He was trying to find a footprint that he could operate in that would allow him to be a coach. That's what his goal is. That's what his life dream is. And then Mike Struthers, he went through a real difficult situation. He had a job. He got hit with cancer, which nobody wants. He was put in kind of like a, I don't know what you'd call it, like a supervisory role and with the Gulls, and he'd work a little bit with us. And, you know, he was, you know, dying to coach and be involved. They all believed in the rebuild. They all shared the vision that Pat has for this organization. But at the end of the day, I felt it was important. Pat felt it was important that we bring people in that I felt were going to improve my strengths and limit my weaknesses. And that's a personal thing. So going to the new staff, we needed to get a power play guy in here that we felt was going to be younger. Okay. Cause I keep saying this, we have 9 guys that are 23 years old and younger, and the most of them are in the 20-year-old range. Okay. So, and through this process where I was trying to create standards and communicate a value system for the group, I'm a 61-year-old guy that grew up in an environment where somebody told you to do something, you did it, or you were getting whacked, you know, and you can't do that today. Like whether it was a verbal reminder or it was, you know, a measure of accountability that was really harsh, you know, that can't be done today. And I'm not saying I was doing that all the time, but my reflex is do it. Like there's no negotiation here. Like you got to do these things. And then, but these kids today are different, you know, and they want to be able to negotiate with you. You know, it's really not in my DNA to negotiate. I'm, you know, I just think when somebody asks you to do something, you do it the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I like it or not, if you don't adapt, you're not going to survive. Right. So, Richard Klune brings in a unique skill set where he played a long time. He played in the minors. He played in the NHL. He fought. I mean, most of the people that follow him in hockey know his journey through life. So at a young age, he's able to share that journey, whether it's athletically or personally, with players. Okay. There's credibility there. He speaks their language. And I think he does a really good job, talking to the players at eye level, okay? And I mean that from like his age.
Mm-hmm.
There's a just different, like I don't speak the same language a 37-year-old kid does. And what amazed me about him, you know, we have known each other in the past through a different fraternity. And, you know, he had called me to check in back in, I don't know if it was March. And I didn't even know he was coaching. I knew he was in development. He had reached out to me when he was done playing. And he said, well, you know, I don't know what I want to do. I love hockey. I want to stay in it. Should I coach? Should I develop? Should I manage? And he communicated what his goals were, and we shared a conversation. He went to Kyle Dubas, and he expressed what he wanted to do, and Kyle put him in a development role, and then that moved into a coaching room a year ago. So when Richie was talking to me about the coaching role, he was able to communicate the detail to what the expectations were for a power play, what they were for a forward. We're in a spot in our development and in our, you know, in our growth as an organization where that conversation with a forward about how to be able to manage a offensive zone arrival, like I'm going to lose some people with the terms here, but when you arrive into the offensive zone and you're going to possess the puck, there are certain things you need to do before you get the puck. They're going to make you more successful with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole about what happens there, but hockey's a fast game. It's not football where you line up and you call a play, but those 2 seconds before you arrive at the puck, that messaging has to be really crystal clear. And then it has to be repeated on the ice in practice. Well, he was able to communicate those things to me in a conversation without it being staged.
Mm.
And I hung the phone up and I was like, whoa, like this kid's got a gift.
Mm-hmm.
But we had, you know, I wasn't looking to hire anybody at that point. So that was in my back pocket. And then went through an interview process and, you know, he was the best fit and he's been terrific. You know, Tim Ami, I've known him for a long time. We've kind of mirrored our paths through coaching. He's a hell of a college hockey player. He was an All-American at Providence.
Mm.
And he played a year in the American League, but he was a skilled guy, tenacious, competitive, and that comes out the way he coaches. I mean, he was here the first year we had the Ducks. He was here 31 years ago. And he's coached some, you know, generational players. He coached Paul Kariya, coached Yami Yager, Adam Oates, Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you not listen to him, right? Like, how do you not take his lessons as a coach and the communications that he had with these generational players and not turn that into an opportunity to grow? Peter Budaj, okay? I had him in Colorado. He knows me. He knows the way I coach. He knows the way that we create culture and how we build it from the goaltender out.
Mm-hmm.
He's very unique in a sense that he sees the game through the eyes of a goaltender for the team, not for the goalie. Mm-hmm. There's a difference there, okay? Some goaltender coaches, they can get very defensive about the goalie, okay? Goalies have standards too. And it's a kind of a joke. It's like Randy Carlyle, who the listeners know and, you know, won a cup here, was here twice. We coached in Toronto together, and there was a guy named Rick St. Croix that was a goalie coach. He played in the NHL. He's a great guy. He's a tremendous human being. Randy, who actually has a hell of a sense of humor that you don't see it. He seems a little bit crusty on the outside, right? But Randy used to tell Rick, he says, oh, you goalie coach, you only got to worry about two flipping guys, right? And everybody else is worried about the 18 skaters, right? So Peter has the ability to worry about the 18 skaters as well.
Mm.
So when he looks at the game through the eyes of the goalie, he's looking at what the players on the ice are doing as well. So, and that includes breaking, you know, how are they breaking out, where the puck should be placed, where the D should be, when there's a shot, where the rebound should go, why it affects the D, through the penalty killing. When you're killing a penalty, what's the preferable situation for the goalie to increase his save percentage? And these aren't contrived conversations. They come naturally.
Yeah.
And that just ties a link into the penalty kills. It ties a link into the D zone coverage. And I mean, the addition of those guys it just made my job easier. Austin's taken on a little bit more of a role in the absence of Fergie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim has stepped into Fergie's footprint. He's expanded into a coaching role. And then we hired Julian Tremblay, who's going to be our skills coach. And I think with this staff, we've kind of have all the boxes checked on what we want to accomplish. And now it's up to us to do it.
And you've had some time to work with the staff through training camp and preseason. I know that in speaking with some of the players, it's been a hard training camp, you know, the guys are pushing each other a lot and there's a lot of young faces, obviously veterans, you know, working to keep their spots. What have you thought about the way that the team has taken on training camp and how the group has looked through, you know, these last couple of weeks?
Yeah. So that, and it's a good segue. Like again, So you put your staff together and then those are all the semantics of it. And then you actually have to put a plan together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that expression that you can have the best plan in the world before you go in the shower and you forget it before you dry off, right? So you got to take the plan and you've got to put legs on it. It's got to roll or run onto the ice, okay? And then you have to execute as a coaching staff. I mean, you know, you talk about the players' execution. We've got to execute too.
Right.
Okay? Right down to where the puck's going to be in a drill. Right down to how the drill is going to be executed. And this was extremely fun. Like this was an extremely easier camp for me.
Mm.
Just because the familiarity we had with the drills the execution of it. Austin did a great job putting together the training camp schedule with David Shanker. And then, I mean, here's the other thing that's, you know, you don't think about when you come in the first time. Like, I didn't even know who Chad Walker was. Like, he's our trainer,
mm-hmm.
right? David Keyes is our load management guy, right? So he's got practices we had last year. So he, when he sees a drill, he knows what the load is for that drill.
Mm.
Because for the listeners, like, sports science has become so big.
Yeah.
You hear it all over the place. Even baseball has sports science people. And what that really means is we don't want to overextend people's energy. We want to keep we want to keep the gas tank full. So every day it's going to go from full to half empty. You don't want to get it below that. So these people that are in the sports science department, you know, they come in and they can tell you, and it's a proactive exercise. Hey, here's where we were in the gas tank today. We might want to pull it back here.
Yeah.
And being able to know these people and know what their job is and how that translates into us being more efficient as a staff is another thing that made training camp better. The players know me. You know, the players know the expectation on the drills. They know the drills. So when you say the drill's name, they're not going, what the heck's the Oilers 3-on-3? They know what it is,
mm-hmm.
which speeds everything up and makes it more efficient.
Looking ahead to some of this season, you know, touching on some of those young guys, Leo Carlson going into his second season, you know, Pavel Mintikov, there's a lot of these young faces on the team. But in talking about Leo, what are you looking for from him this year?
Leo has got first of all, Leo put some weight on.
Mm-hmm.
So he's physically a stronger guy. And he's a year older. And I think the listeners that are, you know, just sports fans in general, like the one mystery, and again, and just being a coach, a lifelong coach, is how does a 19 and 20 year old pick up something really quickly? Okay. Like, just say, going back to the mechanics of playing a game, there's events that happen in games every game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a puck gets dumped in, there's a forecheck. You either get the puck back in the forecheck or you don't, and you're back checking. So I think every hockey fan knows that happens in a game. So when you get into the detail on how to forecheck, okay, I'm not going to go through that whole process, but to give your team the best chance, call it a kill rate, okay, to stop the breakout, there are certain details we give people that allow them to be really good at it, which, and then the analytics ties in, which increases mm-hmm. our chances of getting the puck back on a forecheck. Because anybody that's played hockey that's listening, you start out and you get whatever, you're 5 or 6 years old, you chase the black thing on the ice. That's what you do,
mm-hmm.
right? It goes back to our DNA. We're hunting something, right?
Yeah.
So when Leo's got the maturity level to execute the detail that goes along with killing the breakout, so he can get in there and stop that breakout and get a puck. So with the additional weight and length that he has, he put weight on this summer, he's going to be better at that event. The issue comes for all these young kids, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the veterans have had, I don't know, let's just say they've had 5,000 reps on a forecheck, right? Because they've been doing it 7 or 8 years longer than the young kids
yeah.
are. Well, how do you get the young guys to get that many reps? Just take that one event, which is a forecheck, which happens mm-hmm. every game.
Yep, yep.
Happens 33 times a game, okay? Between like 30 and 34 times a game. How do you get Leo and all these young kids to replicate what the older guys can do because they've had more reps? So the mystery is, Leo can do it. Now, whether it's his IQ, his just God-given talent,
mm-hmm.
he's able to do those things. So the next level for him is, can he get to the front of the net, get inside ice, and add some firmness to his game away from the puck? Because everybody oohs and ahs because Leo gets the puck in the neutral zone and
mm-hmm.
his shirt's flying off his back and he's got quick hands, his head's up, and he's really fun to watch. So he's always going to do that because that's his natural talent. But can he add more strength, more beef to his game in front of the net? And everybody's got, like, at the end of the year when we sat down with Pat, we had that round table meeting, we literally did surgery on each player.
Yeah.
And that surgery started with, okay, what's your off-season goals?
Yeah.
Leo, you need to put on 10 pounds. Certain guys had to put weight on, certain guys had to increase strength, certain guys had to increase flexibility. And I think as a staff, we're proud that we were able to identify those things.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's on the player to do them. So if they come back after 5 months off, I mean, we're done in April.
Yeah.
If you come back after 5 months off and you don't achieve the goals that we asked you to achieve that are athletic things off the ice, then you just put yourself behind the eight ball.
Do you feel the team, for the most part, was able to do that?
Yeah. I mean, Pat's got, you know, a really intimate relationship with Mike Bowitz, who runs the strength and conditioning program, and they have meaningful tests that I think translate into performance on the ice. And we had everybody was really good, you know, and they asked pretty much what they did what we asked them to do. And now we've got to hope that work they did transfers onto the ice with being successful in those events.
I'm curious, in sticking with the forwards group, Trevor Zegras had a tough year last year, you know, facing injuries and just not seeing the Z that Ducks fans know, but now he comes in this year, fresh mind. Where do you think he is at in terms of, you know, his development into this year and how important it could be for him?
So he's at that sweet spot. So he's 23. So again, if you look at the general consensus is that an athlete kind of is what he's going to be between 23 and 26. There's 3 years there where they are what they are. Okay, and that means that they've kind of peaked out. Some guys will get more points. They'll redesign their games based upon where they start slowing down, which is crazy to say that as a 61-year-old guy. But whether it's a motor skill or whatever happens, they lose a step. But and doesn't mean they're not going to get better, but that's kind of the core of what they are. So he's entering into that phase. So if you asked anybody that watches the game about Trevor Zegras, which I don't ask people, but people will make comments to me. Mm-hmm. One of the first things they'll bring up is that Michigan move, right? Because that's where he gets most of his attention. So, and they talk about his skill, right? So he's got skill and he's got tremendous hands. He's got a good shot. So that's his core right now. That's what that's what his value system is. That's what he demonstrates. Okay. So when he goes out to play a game, he wants to demonstrate to his teammates and to the fans that I'm this type of player. I think he learned last year that you have to play on the other side of the puck too, which you have to be responsible defensively. You have to work hard away from the puck. I think, again, we talk about the value system. So that value system wasn't in his playbook. Mm-hmm. So he goes to the World Championships and he gets sat because he wasn't working away from the puck. You know, I know the coaches there and I talked to Z about it, and he was really good about it. He goes, I'm going to use this as a springboard to improve my game. I saw him this summer. I met with him. I went down there and talked with him about it. Talked to his strength coach, who he works with in Stanford. And, so he agrees. Like, I know I've got to use last year's experience where I was basically held accountable to a standard away from the puck that was completely unaware of. And he'll communicate that. He's an honest kid. Like, I genuinely like him. He's a good guy. Like, he's popular in the locker room, and, you know, and I think guys look up to him. And I said, so you have a responsibility to take ownership of that. And when a guy like that, who's got the natural skill, does things like blocking a shot or gets into the third circle at the net front, battles for rebounds, or boxes a guy out, that is a huge impact on the group. Mm-hmm. It just strengthens the messaging from the leadership. He's aware of that, and I think he's really excited about turning the page and rebranding himself as a hockey player.
Heading into this year, I know a point last year for the team, unfortunately, was the penalties. Has that been something that you and the staff have discussed with the team going into the year?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you've heard this. It's been well documented. Yeah. The statistics that would just knock your socks off if you looked at it, just if you stepped away from it unemotionally and, you know, without being a fan of a team, and you looked at a bar graph and you saw how much the Ducks have been penalized since 2005 to now, over like almost a 20-year period. It's like, whoa, like something's wrong here. We did take penalties. So I'm not saying we didn't take penalties. The question is, why aren't the other teams getting called for penalties against us? So I'm very honest with the team about it. They know it. They're playing. Yeah. They know it. Like, they a guy knows when he gets hooked. and there's no penalty called, okay? So last year, I give a guy's credit. They weren't banging the gate, yelling at the referee. I mean, we had one incident in Seattle, but, you know, that was about it, okay? Mm-hmm. So we start, my discussion this year is, and we're gonna you know, talk to the officials about it, but my discussion this year is just expect that we're not gonna win the penalty battle. Like, mm-hmm. we're not gonna get more power plays than the other team does. It's kind of sad to say that, but expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time it's gonna happen. And whether we get penalties or not, let me back that up. Whether we draw penalties or not, that mm-hmm. I can't control the referee calling the penalty. We're gonna do our best to draw penalties by getting inside ice, use our work habits to get hooked, to get tripped, you know, to get cross-checked going to the net. Because if we do those things, we're putting ourselves in a winning position, right, on puck battles. Now, we can control the penalties that we do take. We can't control the hooks.
Right.
We can't control the too many men on the ice, what I'm responsible for. We can't control the cross-checkings. We can do those things. And the egregious penalties are the ones in the offensive zone. We can't be taking offensive zone penalties. Mm-hmm. It's just, to me, that kills teams. So that's what we're going to be, you know, communicating to the players. And they've got a responsibility to try their best to play that style of hockey.
One of the other points of emphasis that Pat shared with us was just wanting to see more of a consistent work ethic from the team. How do you plan to implement that or enforce that with the group this year?
So again, the expectation to work hard like that, you know, that's one of the reasons why I got hired. I think
right.
some of the teams, most of the teams I've coached, or not all the teams I've coached, even as an assistant coach, I'd like to think some of my DNA is in that team personality. Is you got to compete, okay? Like you have to compete, and if you don't compete, it's fundamentally not good for the team, okay? So the consistency, which Pat spoke about, is maddening. That drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think every team has, okay, I'm going to go off grid here.
Okay? No, go ahead.
So Tom Brady, there's a great article in the Harvard Business Journal about Tom Brady's leadership skills, okay? It's a great read. So, you know, for our generation, even the, you know, more importantly, the 20-year-olds, you know, mm-hmm. even the 15-year-olds, they all know who Tom Brady is.
Yeah.
You could say arguably over the last, I don't know how many years, 30 years, like he's been the quintessential leader. He makes a very simple statement, okay, that in his experience, did he win 6 or 7 Super Bowls, whatever it was, there's only 30% of your team will give you 100%, 100% of the time.
Hmm.
70% will give you 70%. 70% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, like, he won Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like, when you read that, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Wow.
So, he makes a comment that I think is appropriate when you talk about Radko Gudas and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So, he talks about Willie McGinnis, who the, you know, California Long Beach native, the locals here know who he is and played at USC and Hall of Fame career, a couple Super Bowls. He was kind of the beast. Like, people were afraid of him. He was a tough person. A very well-spoken guy. I've heard him talk. But he was the guy in the locker room that put some sting in a message. Like, if you didn't do it, like, he was like borderline confronting you.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom Brady was more of like the teacher. Okay. He did it in his own way. He was a fiery guy, obviously. You could see his sideline behavior. But he'd mixed that in there. But his reflection on his leadership and how it impacted the team was that the leadership group would sit down. They'd say, okay, listen, we know that only 70% of these guys are given 100%. So our job is to get 10 to 15% more out of the whole group.
Mm.
And if we can get that, if we can get the 70s to 80s to 85s, we're going to win. It's a really good read.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look it up.
Yeah, and I have my own, you know, thoughts about it. You read Talent Code and Atomic Habits and those things, and they don't get into the whole team thing, but kind of talks about just human beings, how in general, people really don't work as hard as they can work. You know, you read the Navy SEALs books with Goggins, you can't hurt me. I mean, that's what they talk about. So our challenge this year is to get our guys just to work more than they did last year and more consistently. And I think this is a great foundational piece to build off of.
One of the new faces in the group that does bring a leadership background, a Stanley Cup caliber background as well, Brian Dumoulin added into this group. On the defensive side of things, how do you think he can help, in addition to Radko, grow that group of, I mean, there's so many young guys on the back end.
His 420-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
So
how can he help them?
Well, first of all, I recruited Brian to go to Northeastern. I don't know what year that was, maybe 2008 or 9. And he's from Biddeford, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
A very unique hockey path. And he obviously went to BC and he won a national championship there and won 2 Stanley Cups. He's quiet, very professional. I really like the way he carries himself. He's not, again, going back to that whole rah-rah leadership. Yeah. Image, like, he's not like that. He's more of a quieter guy that I think will have a conversation with a player. If you go back to Brady's thing, you don't have to be a pit bull. I mean, Radko looks like he tear your head off, so he can bring that with to a conversation if he needs to. And Brian's gonna be, I think he's just gonna be a mentor. He's gonna be able to talk to a player, and you know, going back to those 10,000 reps or 7,000 reps that an mm-hmm. older guy has, that the young guy's only got like 70 of them. He can share what he's experienced in that journey to be an expert in those 10,000 reps that goes into a breakout or into a, you know, a pinch in an offensive zone forecheck. Like, he can talk to the player about that his own way. Those guys are so important. I mean, and you know, you haven't hit Rob Fabry yet, but he's another one that won mm-hmm. a Stanley Cup. We bring in here, and those guys do everything right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so. You know, we had a practice today. You know, we had 6 guys, so 5 forwards and 3D not playing. So we did some skill development stuff. And, you know, when I was watching them do some things that I was surprised that they weren't doing the necessary things that were going to make that drill be successful for them. And then I reflected on Robbie, who does it. Brian does it. I've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The young guys just don't know. So like anything in life, it starts with awareness, and then you create basically a standard to the process. So there's awareness, then there's a repetition, which is the process. Then there's a reaction. Well, how are you going to react when it doesn't go the right way? And then sometimes guys have to kind of step back, and then you have to kind of reboot them. When they get through that, then it becomes a dictation. And what that means is they're so confident. They've got the repetition. They understand how to execute it. Now, can they manipulate the defender?
Mm-hmm.
That's true psychologically too.
Yeah.
Right. So it's funny, manipulation works both ways, right? Both mm-hmm. mentally and then athletically. So when they're at that point where they've mastered that rep and they're able to react to what happens on the ice, they can actually manipulate what's going to happen next. Those players have been through that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, if you take just that, it's awareness, repetition, reaction, dictation. Take those 4 things and you basically catalog those through young players, and then you attach them to events on the ice, forecheck, back check, D zone coverage, offensive zone play. There's battles within each zone. So they're all exposed to it, but they don't have the same number of reps because of the age.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we can get our leadership group, like Robbie and Brian and Cam and Radko and Killer, who's won 2 cups,
mm-hmm.
to show them how they do it, right? So like you, I don't have kids, but I have nieces, and kids mirror parents. They mirror behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they're not kids, but they are in terms of, you know, like when your guy's 34 and a guy's 20, that's like a generational gap. Right?
It is, yeah.
And they know because they watched him play when they were kids. They watched him win Stanley Cups. So they're going to mirror them. So it's not just about leadership and being in the room and having a talk. It's mm-hmm. also a subtle thing on the ice. Like, you know, hey, watch Cam do this breakout. Watch how he turns his shoulder to manipulate the forechecker. And then they watch it. And you know, like the study's done on this. Like people think that video is the most impactful learning mechanism. It's really not. It's actually what we're doing. It's a one-on-one conversation, then a follow-up with a demonstration. The brain fires off when that happens. So that's a fact. So if you take each of these leaders and you give them that, you empower them with that opportunity to do that for these young kids. There's a legacy going on there. Like I tell Killer all the time, these kids are going to look back at you. You'll be out doing whatever you're doing when you're 42 years old. And I mean, think about it, Killer. These guys are still going to be 28.
Yeah.
And they're going to think back. I learned from Alex Colon on this. I learned from Brian DeMoon. So if you really want to like crystallize this whole process that we're going through, which is very unique, and it's also very rare in the NHL.
It is.
Okay. The opportunity for these older guys to speed up the process for the young guys is going to be massive. And it's really going to dictate how quickly we do turn the corner here and become a playoff team.
I like that you brought that up because one of the questions I asked Cutter recently was, who are you most looking forward to learning from this year? And he said, Alex Killorn, because obviously we see them on a line, but just those off-ice habits too. You could see, I feel like in the short amount of time I've gotten to know Cutter, he's someone that really likes to soak things in as well.
Totally dialed in.
Yeah.
Totally coachable. It's searching. Like we have a thing on our wall. It's really, so there's a, on the one side of the wall, it says, it's from, if anybody watched the movie Boys in the Boat, the book's way better. But they talk about rowing through the pain. Like we all deal with pain, right? And the physically, I've never rowed, but it's a really hard thing. Jillian, she's our dietitian. She's a rower.
Yeah.
And we talk about it. She's like, and she's a, you know, she basically does, you know, triathlon. Mm-hmm. So she deals with pain at its most severe, right? And that's when your brain starts telling your body, I'm tapping out, like I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And how those people are able to just go through it. It's a mental thing, right? So it's really a mental battle, and it's between yourself and yourself. And I think that we have you know, we have players that will actually search outside of the traditional framework of being an athlete to find ways to get better. And I think these are very prominent parts of us accelerating the development here. So in our wall, it just talks about, you know, you control your sleep. You control when you arrive here and how you eat. You control your stretching. You control if you listen intently in a meeting or you just like daydreaming. Because there's information being shared, whether it's through the video or it's a one-on-one meeting. You control your pre-practice vision, what you're going to do. You control your practice habits. Practice execution equals game reality. That's a fact. It's a Bill Belichick quote. It follows you into the game. Right. You control your post practice. What are you doing after practice? Do you need a cold tub? Do you need a hot tub? Then you control your strength and conditioning workout. Like you control the intensity of it. And the last thing is a box says hunt. Yes, please. What does that mean? Well, what do you do when you leave here? These guys are all getting out of the facility by 1:32. You have the whole day.
Yeah.
Like, are you going to listen to a podcast? Are you reading a book? Are you going to do yoga if you're tight? I mean, come on. Like these are things that, I mean, this is what I think is that frontier that you can get instantly better than other teams if you get your team thinking that way. I'll give you an example, Jackson Lacombe. So he's a heck of a player. He's an All-American, you know, almost won a national championship.
Yeah.
And he had a rough year, you know, and I if I look back on it and I had more patience, I wouldn't have been as hard on him. I probably contributed to him having a harder year because I was on him. I had a higher expectation. And he's a different player. So he's a different personality. So we had meetings at the end of the year that were terrific meetings. And he felt that intuitively he wasn't really like an apex predator on the ice. Okay. Like he was not going to run guys over, initiate contact. And he needed to add part of that to his game. And then he, you know, I don't want to kind of violate confidentiality, but
right.
he felt that he could be a little bit more or less reactionary mentally to things happening poorly in a game. So deal with some adversity better.
Mm-hmm.
So he put on like 10 pounds. His coach is a good friend of mine, Bob Motzko in Minnesota. They trained at that, in, Minnesota Gophers hockey training facility.
Yep.
And Bobby saw him on a daily basis. This kid's getting bigger and bigger. And then he went and he learned boxing. So he tried to confront his fear, which is there's no better venue to confront fear than in a ring, whether it's mm-hmm. UFC, MMA, or boxing. It's just, it's such an interesting journey when you do that, the feelings you experience. Mm-hmm. And if you can overcome that, it's not about the physical battle. If you can overcome those feelings, the amount of confidence you get is exponential. And then he sought out another friend that was a special forces friend that went through some exercise with him that will allow him to control fear.
Wow.
That's what that box is for.
Yeah. Hunt. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. That's awesome. Great story for Jackson. Mm-hmm. And look forward to seeing that on the ice this year from him a little bit. One more for you, Crow. As you look ahead, obviously the roster cuts getting down to the final stretch here prior to the season. What are you hoping to see out of the gates in the beginning of this new season?
I'm really excited to see how fast we play. Excuse me, how fast we play. And you know, to me, some of these pivotal events in a game that analytics will capture them, and I think they're very accurate reflections on you meeting your goals as a team identity. So the playing fast thing is being able to get pucks back on the forecheck, okay? So if we're coming out of our zone quickly and we're coming to the neutral zone quickly and we're able to get possession time, there's a yin and a yang. The yin is possession. The yang is less time in the D zone. So I'm very confident that if our team is able to play in the offensive zone and control the puck, you know, control in football, be the ground game, control the time of possession, we're going to have a really good year. And if you talked about this, like if you attach, you know, a success ratio on those events, which is a forecheck, puck recovery, offensive zone, sustain time, and you do that over and over again, your team identity will show up. The issue is when you, and every team does it, you create an identity and you put an expectation to it, and then it's all great. You know, we can have these conversations in the coach's room, and the players can have conversations in the locker room. But if they don't execute, then that identity is not there, right? So I'm also really curious about if our leadership group can be excited about the role they can play in accelerating the development of the group. If they can take on that role. Like I've talked to some guys individually. There's so many guys that are here. So you're trying to manage the day efficiently. But, you know, after this weekend, I'm going to sit down with the older guys and say, okay, are you willing? Are you ready to do this without sacrificing your own game? It's going to be a huge, for me, I mean, looking where I'm sitting, that's going to be a huge part of it.
Mm-hmm. Crow, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been great getting to chat about everything and looking forward to another season.
Thank you, Alexis.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on Duckstream.